I looked at my children and I was not enjoying being a mom. I wasn't enjoying being a wife. And I knew that I could have those feelings because I had had them with my son when he was born.
So we found him a good therapist, and the psychiatrist started prescribing meds, telling us that it was going to be trial and error, and he was correct. There were lots of errors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hankin. And this week on the podcast, Trials of Parenthood, two stories of the lengths parents go to care for their children.
Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, an independent K-12 progressive, non-sectarian school in North Baltimore.
So parenthood, it's hard.
No one tells you.
Laura and I started Stoop and we had no children, footloose, fancy free, but we both were like, we really want kids. We want to have the kids. So we had the kids. It's not like we're regretting it.
No, not regretting it. I still feel that no one tells you how hard it is. What they don't tell you is that kids are tailor-made to trigger every psychological issue you have. Like, I knew about the sleep. I knew about, like, you can't go out all the time. You can't do this. Like, all that I knew about. No one talked about the psychological warfare of it.
It's really...
They didn't. And I'm telling you, it's real. And it's not... It's not that anyone's trying to do it to you, so I shouldn't use the word warfare.
Well, no.
But it
universe,
is a battlefield.
The universe is doing it.
There's like this whole theory that it's exactly the exposure therapy you need to heal from the wounds of your own childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that to be true?
I'm not sure I'm healing. I just think it's like a...
Toughening up, callousing?
There's a way that you can salt wound your childhood trauma.
Okay. So this first story was told at the mental health show we did last spring. And Alex Wyckowski is actually a therapist herself. And I think this offers a very vivid window into an experience that a lot of women have and don't talk about. So we're really grateful for this story.
I'm a licensed mental health clinician. I make a career out of helping people find really good care. And I had no idea how hard that was until I had to do it for myself. In June of 2018, I gave birth to a beautiful little boy. Everybody fell in love with him as soon as he was arrived. When he was 8 months, I found out, surprise, I was pregnant again. And nothing about that pregnancy was the same. I had respiratory issues, migraines, gestational diabetes. And when I was 5 months pregnant, my mom, who's my very best friend, had an issue with her heart and was medevaced to University of Maryland, where she had open heart surgery. And as a result, became a paraplegic. I spent the rest of my pregnancy either at the hospital, wishing that I was home, or home, wishing that I was at the hospital, and I felt like I couldn't do anything right. I had a constant state of anxiety. I never felt calm. I felt like I was always moving from one thing to the next, and I felt like I was making everybody miserable. When my daughter was born in November, she let out a big cry, and she never stopped. She had colic, which only complicated the issue of having two children under two. Things at home got a little bit rough. I was mad all the time. My poor husband, I took it out on him, and God love him, he did the best he could. But I knew, as a mental health clinician, that I needed to get help. For me, it was Christmas Eve. My husband and my son were upstairs sleeping, and I was holding my crying daughter, and I contemplated killing myself. I cried myself to sleep that night. And I woke up the next day and got my kids dressed in adorable little outfits, and we went and we celebrated Christmas like nothing happened. But I knew that I needed help. So at my postpartum appointment, when the nurse came in and asked me if there's anything I wanted to talk to the doctor about, I said I was suffering from the baby blues. My doctor came in, we did the exam, she asked me to meet her in the office, and she never mentioned it. And I thought to myself, if it's not a big deal to them, maybe I'm making a big deal out of this, and it's really, this is normal. So I didn't say anything, I lost the nerve. I went home, and things continued to be pretty bad. I looked at my children, and I was not enjoying being a mom. I wasn't enjoying being a wife. And I knew that I could have those feelings because I had had them with my son when he was born. So I decided that I was going to find a therapist. I have two kids under two. Getting out of the house for an hour is kind of a big deal. So I found a therapist who was close by. She took my insurance, and she was open on Saturdays. And my husband lovingly took both kids, and I went out the door. And when I got there, my therapist wasn't there. The receptionist had given me the wrong day. I had a nervous breakdown in that office. The therapist very kindly agreed to meet me the next week. She's a great therapist, but she's not the therapist that I need. There were a lot of strange, awkward silences, and I really wanted someone to be a little bit more of a talker. But I continued to go, because finding a therapist that accepts your insurance and has a Saturday opening is really hard to find. I knew that I probably needed something more. And so I thought back to my college days when I had gone through a bit of a depression and was placed on Lexapro. And it did wonders for me. But I also knew that if I was to find a psychiatrist, it could take months to get an appointment. I could have to change my therapist. I'd have to take more time off of work. And that just wasn't going to happen. So I decided that I was going to find a new primary care physician. And I went in, and the nurse, God bless her, she sat at the computer and asked me what brought me in, and I said I was, again, having the baby blues. I don't think I wanted to name it as postpartum. It felt too severe for me. And with her back to me, she grabbed a piece of paper and handed it to me to fill out. And she asked me a couple more questions. And then she said, in the past couple months, have you thought about killing yourself? And I said, yes. And she turned around and looked at me as though I hadn't understood her question. And the look of judgment on her face just kind of melted me. So she went out and got the doctor. And I waited probably for about 5-10 minutes for the doctor to come in. And somehow I gathered enough energy that when the doctor came in, I spilled it all out. She said, what can I help you with? And I said, look, I have postpartum depression. I want you to put me on Lexapro. I know you're going to start me out at 5 milligrams, but we're going to end up at 10. She said, whoa. Okay, back up. Tell me what's going on. And she sat and she listened. And I felt a real connection with her, like she understood. And she totally didn't minimize it, but made me feel comfortable in a way that no one else had and that I was craving for. She's done a great job about managing my medication. And there are days when I wake up and I feel like I am a phoenix coming out of the fire carrying water for those who need help. And there are other days that I still feel those embers burning inside myself. But I love being a mom now. My kids are so cute. And I love being a wife. But if there's one thing that I learned about this, it's that this with this system, it doesn't matter how great the care is if we don't make it easily accessible for people.
Yep. I, like, literally, I was at the edge of my seat while Alex was telling this, both in rehearsal and at the show. It's like I identify with nearly everything she's talking about. So
yeah, I still think postpartum depression is something that people just I think it's very hard for people to understand. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems so contradictory. You have a new baby and you, you know, don't want to be around it, or you hate it, or you feel like you might hurt it. It's really hard for many people to understand. And so a story like that is so helpful. Before we go on to our second story, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. Actually, this second storyteller, Michael Teitelbaum, is the president of Baltimore Magazine, and he's a wonderful guy. And they have a podcast, Local Flavor Live, which covers all the dining news in town. And you can also find them at baltimoremagazine.com and on the newsstand.
We also want to thank Golden West, which I jumped in because that was actually the first place we took my firstborn when she was able, you know, she had met the threshold of like 4 weeks so that she wouldn't get the viruses. So I just remember her being this tiny nugget on the bench in Golden West. So
I actually remember several meals at with really small kids at Golden West.
Yeah,
where
they're so kid-friendly.
As soon as the food arrived, though, someone's kid, like inevitably one of the kids was whatever, and you had to leave.
And they're the perfect restaurant for that kind of thing because they're just so... it's big, it's very, very festive and vibrant, and it's a wonderful restaurant in Baltimore, family-friendly and vegan-friendly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we mentioned Michael Teitelbaum, president of Baltimore Magazine, and a wonderful guy, just a warm, genuine person. And he also shared this story at the show we did in the spring featuring stories of like, dealing with mental illness. And again, like I think just a really important story to share. So take a listen.
Many moons ago, while backpacking through Europe, I met a young woman. We fell in love. And 3 years later, we were married at the ripe old age of 24. About 3 years after that, we had our first son. 2 years almost to the day after that, son number two arrives. And 3 years after that, it was my three sons. At the same time, I was building a successful advertising business, and my wife was a well-respected teacher when she wasn't being a full-time mom. We were living a storybook life. Life was great. And that all changed about 12 years ago. And the fact of the matter is, it didn't all change, but it felt that way. Because that's when my youngest son started showing signs of serious emotional distress. We took him to a therapist, and after a couple of visits, she said it was beyond her. So she referred us to a psychiatrist. So off we go to the psychiatrist, and after the session, the psychiatrist comes back and meets with my wife and I and tells us that my son is struggling with mental illness. That was such a foreign concept to me. I swear I thought he said my son was mentally retarded. And I knew that couldn't be the case. It didn't make any sense because up until then, he was a straight-A student. He was a gifted athlete, a talented self-taught musician, loads of friends. In fact, in many ways, he was the easiest of my three sons. Well, we knew we had to get to work and get him the help he needed, and we knew we needed to get educated, my wife and I. So we found him a good therapist, and the psychiatrist started prescribing meds, telling us that it was going to be trial and error, and he was correct. There were lots of errors. And my wife and I discovered NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness. We first went to a family support group, and while the stories from the other participants were heartbreaking and gut-wrenching, in a certain sense, it gave me comfort in knowing that I wasn't alone and that we could tell our story and they would get it. We also discovered that NAMI had an educational course called Family to Family, and we did that, a 12-week course that covers everything about mental illness, all the various diagnoses, coping skills, the science. And quite honestly, the science went well over my head in many cases. But what I took away was that what my son was dealing with was scientifically based and not something he was just going to snap out of. The biggest lesson I learned with NAMI is a hard lesson, and that is that you have to separate the individual from the illness. And that's really hard because my son was all in one package. Lord knows there were many times where I felt like I hated my son. But I never lost an ounce of love for my son. I just hated that illness. My wife and I cried ourselves to sleep many a night. And by day, there was stress and tension and disagreement because we're two different people with two different perspectives and two different approaches about how to help our son. My wife was the detail person. She kept track of every detail. She got him signed up for every doctor's appointment and made sure he was there on time. She tracked all of the meds and made sure he had his meds. She kept a journal of every single medication and the combinations thereof and all of the side effects, which came in really handy for the few times that we had to switch doctors and the few times that, unfortunately, he had to be hospitalized in the beginning. The value that I brought to the table, I like to think I brought a lot of value, but one thing that stands out, I was the designated conversationalist. Whereas my wife was very direct in her communication and my son wanted to be in control of everything, so that kind of communication didn't really sit well with him all the time. I could give him the space and time he needed. I did what I call planting seeds. Well, consider this and consider that and giving some reasons why he should consider that and then giving him the opportunity to think through it and hopefully come to his own conclusions. It didn't work all the time, but it worked better than that direct trying to control him. So the days and the weeks and the months and the years passed by. He did graduate high school. He tried college a few different times to no avail. He tried many a job, and none lasted very long. He did volunteer at the Pearlstone as an organic farmer, and that was a good thing. He actually got Volunteer of the Year one year. But overall, his mental health wasn't improving in the way that we wanted it to improve. His life wasn't moving forward, and he was stuck. And we all came to the conclusion, and when I say we all, I mean my wife, myself, my son, the psychiatrist, and the therapist, all agreed that he could be well served by going to a work-based healing community in Vermont called Spring Lake Ranch. And that's where he learned the value of routine and structure and work and accomplishment and socialization skills and all the building blocks for good mental health. And then he transitioned to another work-based healing community in North Carolina called Cooper Reese. He was gone for a total of 27 months before returning home about 3 years ago, where he got himself set up in his own apartment. He started volunteering again at Pearlstone. He then started volunteering at Shepherd Pratt, and he took a 500-plus hour program in becoming certified as a peer recovery specialist. And that's what he's doing today. He works at Mosaic Community Services as a certified peer recovery specialist, leading groups, working with individuals one-on-one, taking his lived experience and helping them through their mental health challenges. I'm proud of all three of my sons, but my youngest son is my hero, because of the overwhelming challenges that he has and continues to overcome every day. And I'll leave you with this. No matter how dark it appears to be, there is a light. Keep moving towards the light and never, ever give up hope. Thank you.
Hard, you know, it's a really hard thing. And this idea that you have an idea of what your family is going to be like, and it's just not that. It's not that in a million ways. Some of them are harder than others, but you are tested. We are all tested, and I really appreciated his honesty. Before we sign off today, we want to thank the Wine Source, located at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. We want to thank Maureen Harvey, who produces the podcast. Please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast content. And check us out at stoopstorytelling.com. We've got lots of really great shows. We've got a holiday show coming up, music, stories, actually lots of music. It's a big old hootenanny, and we would love to have you come out for that at the Senator Theater on December 12th. That's about it, right, Jess?
Yep. Stay safe.
All right, bye.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.